Should be another great day at the park today as the Giants and Diamondbacks go at Game 2 of this three-game series. Really a pleasure to bring in Andy Baggerly. We call him Extra Bags with two G's on Twitter. And, of course, he writes for The Athletic and covers all of baseball, really, but mainly the Giants. Extra, how are you?
Hey, Marty, I'm good. We're counting down the mosaic pieces, aren't we? We've got almost all of them in place.
Boy, you've been doing a great job all week long keeping everyone up to date. And even today, and it's October 1st, there still is a meaningful game today, believe it or not. Giants are five back with five to play, so we still have something out there to talk about.
Yeah, I've actually got my little handy-dandy coin flip calculator up right now, and it looks like there's basically, 16 outcomes that have to go the Giants' way. And the probability is 1 out of 4,096. So
it's better than yesterday. It was 1 out of 8,000.
Yeah, so, you know, it's doable, but you only have to play the season 4,000 times for it to happen. So, but, you know, no, you're right. It's, when you get close like this, you realize, I think there's a yin and yang to it. The good part is, you know, the Giants are closer to being a playoff team, despite the disappointment this year, than I think we realize. They have a positive run differential, and they're going to have to replace or re-sign Carlos Rodon. They've got some other big things they've got to do. They certainly have to get better. But, you know, they're not starting from being a team that's a 100-game loser. I mean, they're pretty close. They score more than they let in. They're slightly above average on the pitching side. The rotation's got a lot more pieces than they did at the end of last year even. And so you look back, and the positive is, well, you know, they don't have that much work to do potentially to be a playoff team next year. But, you know, the bad part is you look back and you think, oh, gosh, if they'd only played a little bit better out of the All-Star break, if they'd only won another series from the Dodgers or taken advantage of maybe the Reds in a series they lost, you know, it's easier to look back at those games that didn't work out and sort of have those regrets when you only missed the postseason by a little bit. And it looks like they're only going to miss the postseason by, you know, a little bit, and they still got a chance to finish above 500, which is something I don't think we would have given them a shot at doing a week ago. So, you know, it's a positive September, and, you know, it obviously is it's a good news, bad news kind of thing.
Well, that's why we call it the mosaic, and that's where all the pieces come together. But mid-season, and you just said it, and I said it in the open, they disappeared after the All-Star break, and really after what, May? I don't think they had a winning month until now. What happened to this team? What happened to them, if you could sum it up?
You know, I think the biggest thing is that they weren't able to complement their strengths. Their strengths from the pitching side is they suppress homers as well as anyone. They get ground balls as well as anyone. They get, you know, weak contact as well as anyone. And they didn't turn enough of it into outs. They didn't, instead of leveraging the greatest strength they had as a team, it turned into a liability because the defense was so bad for so long. And it's been better in the second half. It has been. The bullpen's been better, too. But obviously the bullpen had some step back as well. But I think it's in the offense, while you know, they've scored runs, they haven't really hit as many homers. I think they've had, at least as of last week, more plate appearances with the bases loaded than anyone in the major leagues. And they've scored a fair amount of people in those situations, too. But, you know, when you have a team that's older and you draw a lot of walks, but you don't have those damaging hits, you know, it's hard to really, you know, have an above-average offense. And the fact is they've been an average offense, and they needed, I think, to be above average and quite a bit above average to out-hit some of the mistakes that they made. So I think those are probably the biggest things right there.
Yeah, I think too many players disappeared when it mattered. And that was it for me. And they're putting on this rush in September. But for me, it's not enough because everyone's being evaluated now. This team has got a lot to do in the off season, and you don't want to get fooled here in September by saying, my God, boy, they're terrific. But you can't do that. You have to look at the whole season. And I was thinking about it today. If you look at the offense, give me players who have to come back. You know, in other words, you'd say, okay, well, maybe Crawford. He's under contract. But look, they're talking about signing every shortstop in town. What offensive players would you say have to come back next year?
You know, I don't know if anyone has to come back. You know, I think a lot of people will come back. And what's interesting is you can make the case for almost anyone to come back. with the exception of maybe Tommy LaStella. I don't know how he fits on next year's roster, but you can make a case for Jock Peterson. You can make a case for Brandon Belt. You can make a case for certainly Evan Longoria.
And where does it get you though?
Well, I know you got to give yourself room to pivot and bring in new people. I mean, where does JD Davis fit on the team next year? Where does Luis Gonzalez fit on the team next year? Where does Lamont Wade Jr. fit on the team next year? And, you know, how can you sort of have Wade go in and have a sort of a big role on next year's team and bank on him when, you know, he didn't have a very good season? It's really going to be interesting to see how they put this puzzle together, because I think they realize, hey, you know, they've got to get more athletic. They got to get younger. The inputs from the farm system have not come as quickly as they'd hoped. I think the pandemic, you know, has got a lot to do with that, but every team has put up with that. You know, I think we're going to see Casey Schmidt in the big leagues next year. I think we're going to see Kyle Harrison in the big leagues next year, but you know, you don't bank on that happening. You don't bank on those guys being key players next year. You got to have a safety net. And so I think that it's basically going to be, hey, what are our biggest opportunities? What are the people out there that we can add, either in trade or free agency, that can really help turn our fortunes around and, you know, make those moves and then figure everything else around it?
Well, I think Mike Yastrzemski has helped his case because he's played good defense and he takes his walks. He gets deep in the counts, and I think September has helped him. I think September's helped Longoria for perhaps getting his option picked up. But I guess my whole point in September is they all have motivation to do something, because my point is they all could be gone. And now they're trying to show, hey, you know, we can still do this when the pressure really is off. They were way out of it. They did this little run here to get closer, but they've been way out of it for a while. So my point is, I guess everyone has motivation to do something, and I think that's what September's all about. And I credit them for doing it. A lot of teams would have given up, and players would have given up, but everyone here, I think everyone on this team, offensively, is under scrutiny, from Austin Wins right to Joey Bart.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. And it is interesting to think about, you know, last year was just such a team dynamic, you know, greater than the sum of their parts kind of a thing, you know, where they won the 107 games, and everyone contributed to it, and it just seemed like it was almost there was no individualism at all. It was all about the collective. And this year it didn't work out. I think you sort of saw them go game to game, and it was frustrating to think that, okay, that it just isn't working the same as it did last year. And when they kind of got out of it and they flipped the switch to, let's just play for individual stuff, let's play for ourselves, you know, as Evan Longoria said, let's find our why. And for most people, it was individual reasons. It was selfish reasons, going for a more money in arbitration, or setting yourself up for free agency, or trying to get a role on next year's team, or even a roster spot on next year's team. And it seems like they've played better since they've gone to more of a selfish motivation, assuming that's the case for a lot of guys, is you sort of just naturally pivot into, okay, what's motivating me to give my best today? And I think that's kind of interesting.
Yep. Motivation, Andy, is the key word that you used, and they've got motivation right now to do something. So we'll see where it ends up. My other thought, and I'm glad to have you on because we always get to talk about baseball and kind of the inner part of this team. It's too much platooning, and of course it's easy to say analytics, platooning, and all this. You know, you take a different position on each one of them. But when you platoon six spots, if you have, that means you have to have 12 players having great seasons. Now, last year they did, but you can't platoon six spots. You can't platoon five spots, because then it takes 10 players, and you've only got 14 offensive players. So my point on this whole thing is they have to get players, and they have to get players like every other team in baseball. Look at the strong teams in baseball. They put a team out there, six or seven spots are the same spots all the time. To me, that's the biggest challenge of this winter, is getting players who you don't have to platoon and say there's something wrong with you. You can't hit lefties, so we have to get a guy who can hit lefties or hit righties. And I think that's the problem.
You know, it's one of the things Buster Posey mentioned when he was talking to us on his sort of introductory Zoom, or whatever that was, when he was announced as buying into the Giants' ownership. That was the one thing he mentioned was continuity, the importance of continuity, and and just team building and chemistry and not having the bodies flying around left and right. And you know, here we've got the Giants using 65 players this year. It's one more than they used when they set a national league record in 2019. We thought we were kind of done with this, with the churn, and we weren't. And yeah, I think that does have a negative impact on team building, on chemistry, on all those things. And then, you know, obviously the easiest thing to do is to roll out Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and Trey Turner, and then you can put up with, you know, a Cody Bellinger not really contributing much offensively, but being a, you know, still super dynamic in the outfield, and you can put up with the Max Muncy, you know, really struggling to hit for 4 months, and because you've got, you know, those other guys will cover up a lot of flaws. And the Giants haven't had that. They haven't had the everyday players. They haven't had the superstar players. And I think every team would want them, you know, just like every team would rather have, you know, five super strong starting pitchers and not have to use openers and stuff like that. So I think that you're probably going to see a mix of that going forward, but that's the key. It's got to be a mix. You got to have, you know, some positions where you're optimizing because you don't have you know, everyday players, and then you've got to have other spots where you do have an everyday player, and you need those guys to carry you sometimes, and the Giants haven't had those players, so that's going to be something they're going to hopefully try to address this offseason.
Well, they have to evaluate better on offense. I think they evaluate pitching very well, but it's the offense is where you see the 65 players coming in, and that's that to me, that is the biggest problem. Yeah, how about this? The Dodgers may non-tender Cody Bellinger. They're trying to free up some money. Of course, they'd like to get Aaron Judge. That's the biggest nightmare for the Giants. What would you think about Cody Bellinger on the Giants?
Wow, hadn't really thought about that one, Marty, but you're right. He's a guy who's won an MVP award. He's put up numbers. He's pretty removed from that kind of production, but you still get paid for it in arbitration. So it's not going to be a small number that he's going to make. And so I guess that wouldn't surprise me if he does get non-tendered and the Dodgers maybe look to move in a different direction. You know, it would be interesting. I think you've seen Farhan Zaidi was not shy about going after Jock Peterson, someone that he knew well from his time in LA. And I think that, you know, probably he's going to have a super informed inside information on Bellinger and just what might be fixable there, or and if he is available, then I think that that's probably a better question for Farhan, because he's someone who would be able to make a super informed call on that, and hey, if this guy's got more in the tank, then they might go for it.
Well, plus defense. We talked about defense, and defense in the outfield was a big problem. Put him in center field and forget about it. So I just thought about it. I said, all right, Cody Bellinger, why not? Andy Baggerly with us. Of course, it's great to have you on. I enjoy these discussions. Andy, of course, writes for The Athletic. You get to vote for the Cy Young Award. I heard you on with Pop yesterday talking about it. Boy, I'll tell you, maybe Carlos Rodon, the season, Andy, is one of the greatest in San Francisco Giants history, really. And I know you said he'd probably be fourth or fifth on a ballot. But, boy, this guy has had a tremendous, tremendous season. We don't know that much about him. Other than he's a real competitor. We hardly got to know him. But, boy, what a year for Carlos Rodon.
No, seriously, it really is. And I think that, you know, even if they – I don't think there's any replacing the numbers that he put up this year. I mean, it's a highest strikeout per nine. You know, obviously he's not a guy who throws 200 innings, but how many of those guys really are out there anymore? I think the teams will take what he's given you over five and two-thirds, six innings every time. And he stayed healthy all year. You know, his last pitch of his last home start was 97.7 miles per hour. He exactly told us. You were sitting there with me in the dugout in Scottsdale Stadium, and he's sitting on the stairs, and he's sort of looking out, and he says, you know what, these guys are getting me in the right year. And and he was right. You know, he was absolutely right.
That.
Yeah, and but you're right, we didn't get to know him super well. He's a guy who I think, you know, burns a little hotter than most. He's got a little Bumgarner in him. He's a little ornery. He doesn't like when the cameras are on him and stuff. But but he's somebody who just, you know, he's the bully who walks on the beach and is going to kick sand in somebody's face that you don't like. That's what he does. And I don't, even if they bring him back, even if they re-sign him, which we know for, you know, many historical reasons why that's probably not very likely, I don't think they're going to be able to replace the production he's given them this year. They're going to have to probably find multiple people to fill in and do what he's done this year, because it's just, you don't sign anybody and expect to get what you got out of Carlos Rodon this year.
No, and plus you're chasing, look, you got to be realistic here. You're chasing the Mets. You're chasing the Braves. You know, St. Louis, Milwaukee, all that you probably can handle. The Padres and the Dodgers, you've got to spend money. You've got to get players. And for me, I know they don't like to sign pitchers, but they can afford it and they can eat it. All right, if he's good for 3 years and the next two he's not, too bad. They can afford it. They've got to get players. And I'm telling you, this guy should be number one on their priority list.
Well, and that's another thing I think. You know, if you're confident as an organization that you're going to develop the Schmidts and the Harrisons and the Lucianos, and you're going to have people, you know, who are going to be inputs that are pretty affordable for the next, you know, 5 years, then, yeah, I think that's a sign of confidence if you can sign a Carlos Rodon and think, well, gosh, you know, the last 2 years of this deal might not be very good. He might be a little bit of a payroll anchor. But, you know, you count on having enough flexibility to be able to handle that because, one, you're the Giants, you're not the Pirates. And two, you know, you're developing other people, so you're getting inputs that are affordable around him. So you should still have flexibility to do the other things you need to do. And the other thing about Rodon is, and I've made this point, he's somebody where I get why they don't want to sign, you know, like a Jeff Samardzija-type contract, because then you're stuck throwing Jeff Samardzija out there in year four when he's, you know, not very good. And he's given up a ton of hits. And you're throwing one bad investment after another in the form of innings. And these guys don't like to, you know, put anybody on the field who when they've got a better alternative. And I get that. But I think with Carlos Rodon, the guy's either going to be a stud or he's going to be hurt. And he's not going to be out there just, you know, throwing BP. So I don't know if that's as big a factor in his case, but I do understand why that's one of the reasons that they don't give out those long-term contracts to starting pitchers.
Well, what makes the team very interesting this whole year, if you go into a series and you got Rodon in game one and Logan Webb in game two, and if it's Alex Wood, if he's okay, or Cobb, or whoever else you're going to put in there, DeSclafani, you've got a heck of a chance with that one and two. If you have just Webb going in there and then a bunch of pitchers who are okay after that, it's a whole different ball game. So that's my point. You got to have the ace. You have to have
it. Yeah, and, you know, there are going to be some other alternatives out there. You know, what is Jacob DeGrom going to get? It's probably not going to be a long-term deal, given his age and his health history, but it's going to be a big number. You know, one guy came off the board the other day, yesterday, I believe, Charlie Morton.
Yeah.
He's a guy who could have fit sort of the Farhan mold for veteran pitcher, high strikeout rate, you know, somebody who is not going to sign a long-term deal because of his age. But the Braves locked him up for $20 million next year and a $20 million team option the year after that. So he's one guy who I think could have fit their model, and he's off the board. And you know, I think a lot of teams are probably looking at it the same way the Giants are, and that's that poses a problem when the way you evaluate, the way you like to do business, is being sort of copied around the industry. Then you know that means the price of doing things your way has gone up, and maybe you have to think about doing it a different way.
Yep, I agree. Grant Brisby had something the other day, if I read it correctly. Did he suggest trading Doval and give a reason for that? Grant's always coming up with good, interesting columns.
Yeah, he did. He told me he was going to write that, and I said, buddy, good luck with that one. But
yeah.
But you know what? You read it.
What was his theory?
Well, his theory basically is that there are very few relievers, you know, who throw that hard, even if they're huge difference makers, who have, you know, a long career. And basically what he's saying is, you know, this is a huge value piece right now, so the Giants could, you know, sell him to a contender and maybe get some prospects back that you can use to flip, you know, for other players or whatever, or to keep those young players. And I think that's what it's kind of the old deal where, you know, you don't put the fancy Mercedes hood ornament on a junker, you know, but the Giants are not that far away from being that team. But I think it's, you know, they didn't really need Doval for much of last year. He wasn't a huge input in the 107 win season, and they found a whole bullpen basically on the cheap. So, you know, maybe if you feel you can do that again, then the biggest difference you can make is not necessarily having, you know, a chainsaw in the ninth inning. Maybe you just have a hammer if all you need is a hammer to do the job.
Yeah, you make the Edwin Diaz trade, and you get Kalenic and another couple of players. You can make that trade like the Mets did. I like it. Not bad. You know, Grant always comes up with something good. Of all the playoff series and everything coming up here for us in October, I think it's going to be fascinating with the three-game series. Any city or any team jump out at you and you say, boy, I can't wait to see this?
You know, the fact the Mariners are in the postseason after 20-something years. I mean, that's cool. I mean, I have family up in Seattle and who are Mariners fans, and it's, you know, that team has put its fans through a whole lot, you know, and it's funny. It's not like there hasn't been anything worth watching. They had the big unit, and they had Griffey, and they had Edgar, and, you know, they had the beginning of A-Rod's career. I mean, you know, it's so many great players have gone through there. And obviously Ichiro and the year where they won 116, I think. So, but yeah, that big, deep playoff runs have been few and far between, or any playoff runs lately. So I'm looking forward to seeing what it's like for the Mariners. And what seed are they going to be in the wild card, Marty? I don't have the standings in front of me.
Well, there could be anything. Toronto, Tampa Bay, and Seattle. Who knows? We'll find out on Wednesday.
Right. So I think they've got a lot to play for, especially
absolutely.
If they could get the number one seed and get home games, I think that would be the big thing. You know, because it'll really mean a lot when they can actually play at home, which obviously if they're not the number one wild card, they'd have to win that first round to get some home games. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, me too. That's exactly what I would have picked. Well, Extra, thanks for being on, as always, all year long. I love our discussions. We can get down to the heart of this team. And we don't get blinded by, you know, a couple of performances here and there, here and there. So I appreciate you being on. I always do.
No, thanks, Marty. It was good to see you in Arizona the other day. And hope you have a good off season and start to getting those mosaic tiles ready for next year.
Really? Okay. All right. Have a good day. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Marty.
All right. That is Andy Baggerly. Boy, a pleasure talking with him. As I say, we could get down to the heart of what's going on without the rose-colored glasses here, and I like to do that with Andy. All right, coming up next, Bill is going to talk with Mark Gardner. And, of course, Gardy was here last night, and he was the bullpen coach for the Giants, longtime pitcher for the Giants. And I think going back to 1996 when I started this whole thing, I think he may have been one of the first interviews I ever did, Mark Gardner. So I'm anxious to hear him with Bill Askey right after this.